WBAI New York and on the internet at WBAI.org. At the program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie will be back next week following the work of the Midnight Ravers at 2 a.m. And it's 5 a.m. and WBAI 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. It is time for Back of the Book. Where is it? Right here.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
I'm sure hoping that it's 5 a.m. on a Saturday morning. And if it is, you're listening to All. It's no wonder that the so-called American left is such a mess. Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
We're going to talk about various things here on this program. You can find out a little bit more about what we're going to talk about by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can look around at things up there. When you get there, you'll see on the left-hand side of your screen a blue navigation frame. At the top, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that. You'll get to the web page for this morning's radio program. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 126th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we can't reference them on this program. A recorded program is not as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. And the top story of this week is, we are holding at the gigantic population of 119 followers on Twitter. Oh, so many people are amazed that there are that many people in the world. A program note. We are to be preempted for an on-air fundraising special next Saturday morning. We are scheduled to be back on Saturday morning, March 11th, so tune in to hear us then. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, March 8th, 2023 at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 674,892,724 on Friday, and global deaths reached 6,869,650. In America, the number of reported cases as of Friday was 103,370,611, and the death toll in America reached 1,119,546. So 2,366 people have died of COVID-19 in America in the last week, which is about 450 fewer deaths over this past week than we'd had for the previous week. The reported death rate is coming down, but it's still substantial. There has never been a war in which that many people in America had died. And when have thousands of people in America died every week for almost three full years? The pandemic is not over. Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on. We've both gotten our bivalent vaccinations. We are not among those who are saying that getting a COVID-19 infection is like getting a cold. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course. This was all mostly preventable. The last time we did this radio program from WBAI Studios somewhere in downtown Brooklyn was on March 7th, 2020. When we come back on the air in 2 weeks, that date will be 3 years in the past. Wow. I don't know when or if we're ever going to go live again. There's no telling what's going to happen, but, you know, we'll have to see. We have to see what's going to happen, but, on the 21st of March, not only will it already be spring at that point, but it will also be the actual 3-year anniversary of our starting to do these pre-recorded pandemic programs. Oh, boy, I don't know how things are going to go, but 3 years of this, it's kind of nerve-wracking. And speaking of the fact that in March we will be doing programs in the spring, not right away, of course, I will note that we are now in late winter. This is late winter, so the end of winter is almost upon us. Oh, boy, oh, boy. And the January temperatures in some places set the record for the warmest January ever in some places. And I think it's something like, is it the 7th?
Yes, it's the 7th warmest January.
When you take in everything worldwide, it's the 7th warmest January ever on planet Earth. So this is something to take note of, along with a lot of other things, like 2,000-mile storms coming one after the other, crippling part of the country, and then having these gigantic snowstorms and brutally cold weather, in some cases sub-zero, and very nearby record-high temperatures. This is part of what's happening. Climate change is not necessarily neat. It's messy, it's crazy, and you get things like part of the air from the Arctic comes flying down into the United States, and tropical weather starts whipping up from the other side. So you end up with record high temperatures on one side of a weather front and record low temperatures on the other, and they're not that far apart, which is why you have these tremendous storms having so much power, with tornadoes and high winds and a great deal of precipitation. When you have that tropical air mass, which has been hanging around in some cases in the 80s and 90s, and it's not quite that warm when it gets up to the other front, but it's still up there in the 60s or 50s, and then it gets hit with some weather that's 20 or 30 degrees cooler. Well, that, of course, is going to cause a lot of precipitation, a lot of turbulence, and this is what starts things like tornadoes and a lot of wind and great big storms that are 2,000 miles long. And whereas years ago, the storms were of a certain size, you would see them on the weather maps coming across, and then, 10 or 15 years ago, I think, we started seeing 1,000-mile storms, a storm that was 1,000 miles long, sweeping from the West Coast to the East Coast of North America. And, Oh boy, that was rare, and then it wasn't so rare, and then it became common. Now, in the past number of months, we're starting to see 2,000-mile-long storms. And I'm sure they won't be common right away, but if the trend continues, there's no reason to believe that 2,000-mile-long storms are not going to become common in a few years in the future, because you've got this tremendous amount of extra energy in the atmosphere, and that's what does this. The Gulf Stream is splitting, turning into various parts. The Gulf Stream looks wacky. It's no longer the Gulf Stream that we knew from decades ago, which had a certain shape to it most of the time, and which would loop around the Rocky Mountains, then loop south and come up about the East Coast and stuff like that. And we don't have that anymore. Now the jet stream is split up and crazy, and sometimes it goes way south of the Rocky Mountains, and sometimes it's pretty far north. And when it does that, it's pushing all of that cold air from the Arctic region into the places people live in America. So, oh boy. Yeah, climate change, it's here. And no matter how much certain people deny it, it's happening.
Oh, Warpal, I think before you said the jet stream, but I think you said the Gulf Stream before that, so.
Oh, yeah, the Gulf Stream. Well,
Gulf Stream waters.
That would be pretty bad if the Gulf Stream started squirting away along in the middle of America. Yes, of course, the jet stream. The jet stream is the air, and it comes into Gulf Stream is a very big current that takes warm water from around the Caribbean and brings it up by Northern Europe, and which makes a lot of Northern Europe habitable. And the Gulf Stream is also having interesting things going on. And there is some concern that at some point the Gulf Stream may in fact stop, at which point Northern Europe starts becoming a difficult to inhabit place.
You mean no more streaming? That's what would happen? It would just...
One of the things that people have been concerned about is that it's a current in the water.
Yes.
It can stop. It's being driven by the atmosphere and the heating, and it's heated from below, of course, also a bit by, you know, what is it, 50 milliwatts per square meter on the face of the Earth. But it also has the global warming aspect. The air is warming up the water. And, of course, that's not an efficient transfer, but it's happening enough, and it's happening every day, and the amount of heat in the atmosphere, the amount of energy in the atmosphere is enough that it's affecting the water. And it also has a lot to do with the top layers of water. If they get warmer, it's going to affect flow, because the flow is driven by heat. And so, yeah. It is possible, and some people have talked about this, it's possible that at some time in the future, the Gulf Stream could just stop. Or it might not go as far as it has. Or it might come from someplace else. There are a lot of different things. Nobody can figure it out. You can't, even with just a slide rule or a full-fledged supercomputer, you can't figure this stuff out because it's too damned complex.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
And since we're talking about things getting heated up and water and all of this, Mount Etna is slipping into the Mediterranean Sea at the rate of 14 millimeters per year. It's 0.44 inches per year. So, oh boy, because Mount Etna, it's on Sicily. It's on the eastern coast of Sicily, right off the toe of the boot of the Italian peninsula. And Mount Etna is an active volcano and has been for thousands upon thousands of years. and is famous in the old world. People wrote about it and they drew pictures of it. And there are a lot of pictures, drawn pictures and paintings even of Mount Etna, both when it's not doing anything and when it's spouting lava and smoke. And yeah, a very, very long time ago, thousands of years ago, part of Mount Etna did slip into the Mediterranean Sea. And it was an event very much like what happened at Mount St. Helens in the Cascade Range in Northwest America. And that happened in 1980, and there was a lot of rumbling, and they were saying, oh, what's going to happen with Mount St. Helens? And the lava came up, and all of the gas and stuff came out, and it was so hot, and it basically blew the side off the top of that mountain, and that big chunk of mountain just slid down the side, and along with it came the pyroclastic flow. Pyroclastic flow is what you call all the stuff that comes out of a volcano, and some of the stuff is very hot, and it goes right up into the atmosphere and threatens aircraft, and some of the stuff comes flowing down as if it were water, because some of that stuff is very dense. It's in a gaseous state, but it's a lot more dense than air is, because it's got a lot of really bad stuff in it. And it also has things that are very hot. Plus, there's a great deal of ash and dust in it. And the ash and dust is basically slightly cooled lava and glass. Because the lava, you know, the lava goes up and it's molten, but then it gets blown out into the air and into tiny little particles. And those particles cool down fairly fast, although they give their heat to the atmosphere that's now flowing. And so you got this hot glass coming down in down to microscopic levels, and it's flowing down like a flood. And so that's what happened at Mount St. Helens. We have pictures of it, and you can see the pictures of what happened after it, and people were killed. Well, the same thing happened with Mount Etna thousands of years ago. No photographs of that one. And so Mount Etna at that time, they also have traced that it caused these big tsunamis in the Mediterranean Sea. And Mount Etna is on a slope. And the slope isn't a part of the volcano. There is an underlying bedrock, and the volcano's coming up through that. And so a big chunk of the volcano could just slip down and cause, again, gigantic tsunamis. This one might be bigger than what happened thousands of years ago. Who knows? But it could be something like that. And a very large percentage of Mount Etna could end up in the Mediterranean Sea in the course of like a minute. You know, so that would be very bad. That would affect a lot of things. This may not happen for thousands of years, but we don't know. There could be a little bit of geological burping happening up at the bottom of the mountain, and that could break up some of the side of the mountain, and there it goes. It'll fall right in. So this is something interesting and new. I hadn't known that it was liable, that it was slipping at a certain rate. The fact that it's slipping, that kind of means that it is going to fall in, but it might take thousands of years for it to do that, or it may be happening right now. And as we've noted, this is a pre-recorded radio program because of COVID and all of that stuff, and we're not allowed to go in. If you're hearing this over the air, it's the 25th of February. Well, we're recording this on February 24th, and it's a year ago today, as we record this program, that Russia invaded Ukraine in a war of conquest because Vladimir Putin wants to resurrect the Soviet Union. The prediction a year ago was that the Russian army would be in Kyiv within 3 days and that they'd plug in a puppet government and do as they pleased. And I am so glad that it hasn't worked out that way. I mean, we've seen how this works before. 1939, we saw it. We saw it in several different ways. One, Hitler said, I want Sudetenland, which is the outside part of the border of Czechoslovakia, which happened to be where they had their fortresses and defenses set up. And then he was threatening war. And Britain and France said, oh, we don't want a war. So they knuckled under to Hitler and said, we'll do this, and he has no further territorial demands. He even made a comical speech about that at one point. And so they did that, and that happened, and the Nazis moved in, and they took over all of those areas, and of course the rest of Czechoslovakia was laying there wide open. And oh boy, comes about 6 months later, the Third Reich says, hey, you know, why don't we just take the whole damn thing? And they march down the rest of Czechoslovakia and take it all. And then the next year, they say, well, we've digested Czechoslovakia. What else? Oh, look, there's Poland. Poland looks kind of juicy. And they went after Poland. And there are some interesting parallels here, besides just the fact that a dictator invaded a foreign country, a sovereign country, to take it over. We also have, you know, Poland wasn't the most savory joint going. They had had dictators for quite a while after World War I. They were loaded up with dictators. A guy named Pilsudski was there and some other people who were far from savory. And I just mentioned Czechoslovakia and the Germans coming in to take it over. Well, during all of that, those little negotiations to make it sort of nice for everybody, Poland got a piece of Czechoslovakia. Hungary got a piece too. But Poland said, hey, we want a piece of that action. And so they took themselves a piece of Czechoslovakia. Not a big piece, but a sliver of Czechoslovakia. Sort of helping to legitimize the German takeover of Czechoslovakia. And then we see what happened to Poland. Now you can say, well, you know, Poland deserved it. To a degree, maybe they did, but certainly it's bad to have one country deciding they're now going to make this policy of invading other countries and taking over. And of course, as we see, history tells us, yes, they kept doing that. They did that till they took over basically Europe. I mean, they had their allies in Italy, and they had their other ally, the Soviet Union. And the Hitler-Stalin Pact said, yes, we'll both go in and take over Poland. And they had in the treaty, it showed just exactly where the lines would be. You know, Germany gets this part, the Soviet Union gets that part of Poland, and it'll be all hunky-dory. And so they did that, and eventually the Third Reich took over the rest of Europe, pretty much the rest of Europe, and that's history. Well, some people are saying, hey, you know, in Ukraine, there's a lot of corruption and there are bad people. Yeah, Ukraine isn't the most enlightened joint in the world. It's not a place I would really want to live. Their politics are awful. They have homophobes and some bad guys in there. But you don't stand around and say, therefore, this guy gets to say, hey, there are Nazis in Ukraine, and then invade it and take over the whole country. You know, we've got Nazis in America, and there are Russian nationalists who have for decades said, we need to take back Alaska. It is, after all, ours, and those awful capitalists simply bought it from us for a song. We want to go back and take Alaska back. And yeah, so they could use the same argument. There are Nazis in America. There are Nazis in Alaska. We can tell you that. And, you know, so we're going to go in there and take over Alaska again. I think that would be something that would trigger a war much larger than what's happening in Ukraine right now. Anyway, so yeah, you look at Ukraine and you say, there are some things we really don't like about Ukraine. But the bigger evil is having somebody do this thing of conquering another country. Because we also have claims on Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. They also used to be parts of the Soviet Union. After the Soviet Union invaded them and took over. And this is also why Finland, which lost some of its territory to an invasion by the Soviet Union, they are joining NATO because they said, look, this is getting crazy over here. If we don't go with NATO, the Russians are going to overrun us completely this time. And so, yeah, so we have these things going on, and you've got to say, in terms of geopolitics, you cannot just stand around and let the big bullies start gobbling up other nation states, because as we've seen, it becomes a habit. And so, yeah, so it's good that Ukraine is resisting and is blasting away at the Russians and putting up a surprising resistance. What was supposed to take 3 days hasn't been accomplished in a year. And, you know, Putin is making noises, but he ain't taking over Ukraine. So, yeah, this is something that's going on, and this is world history here. It's going to go into the history books, and we're going to see who said it was okay to do this and who said it wasn't. And I'm glad the United States of America says it's not okay. With Trump in there, he would have said, well, it's my pal Putin. Well, we're not in Ukraine. You know, he would have cited Hunter Biden and said, oh, hey, you know, besides delivering votes that I asked you to do years ago, could you also go in and find Hunter Biden's laptop while you're in Ukraine? You know, he would have appealed to Putin to do that. Putin might have shown up with a laptop of some sort. Who knows? They're very good at that kind of spy craft in Russia. They've been doing it for so long. They're excellent at it. Anyway, besides the political necessity of making it so that bullies don't start taking over other countries, you also have this humanitarian thing of they're murdering civilians like crazy. The Russian military is unable to destroy the Ukrainian army. And so what they're doing is they're bombarding the infrastructure. They're blasting away at apartment houses, and they're just tearing everything apart, and they're killing huge numbers of civilians. That alone, the humanitarian aspect of it alone, should be something that any decent human being would say, no, this is wrong. This is wrong. You cannot go around doing this kind of thing. But I guess there's room for disagreement on even that. I hear that some folks had a rally in Washington, D.C. this past Sunday. I hear that at least one leftist group refused to allow their spokesperson to speak at this event because she would have been sharing the stage with some right-wing bad people. You know, human politics, I've said this in the past, human politics is circular. You go very far to the left, you go very far to the right, and you would think you're as far apart as possible. But that's if everything's in a straight line. If everything is in a circle, the far right and the far left kind of meet and mingle off in the back of the circle. And that's what's happening here. It's amazing. I mean, I can understand the right wing pumping this rally up. And I'm reading that this event was promoted by Fox News and also promoted on Alex Jones's InfoWars atrocity. Yeah, these are great left events, you know. This event was billed as being against the war and against the, quote, deep state, unquote, which is a favorite right-wing figure of speech used by the Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, LaRoucheites, neo-Nazis, and other Trump supporters and right-wing cult members. And a bizarre aspect of this event to me was that the anti-war part was only against the United States of America and Ukraine. I guess the leftoid elements are all considering that Russia is not waging a war by blowing up all of that Ukrainian infrastructure and apartment houses, but that this really is just a, quote, special military operation, unquote, as per Putin's rhetoric. Really, this is a surreal event. The so-called American left is joining the hard right that's determined to ban women's health care, outlaw treatment for transgender youth, roll back marriage equality, suppress voters who aren't likely to vote for right-wing bad candidates, and throw a whole lot of those leftoids into prison camps. If last Sunday was an IQ test, I think I know who got a very low score. And I've seen an announcement that they all thought that this lopsided event, which drew hundreds, I'm seeing it reported that this odd mixture of fringe dwellers is going to try to make a big organization out of all of this at some meeting in April in Texas, of all places. Yeah, they're gonna you know, get together and form a huge coalition to oppose, to be an anti-war group and an anti-deep state group. Oh, and I don't know.
That's just nuts.
Maybe we need to start publicly asking, what the hell is wrong with these people? Yeah, you can guess that I didn't go to this stupid event. But, you know, and yeah, the so-called American left. I looked for the American left many years ago. What did I find? I found a mess dominated by guilty white liberals, poseurs, and grifters. And there are so many of those kinds in the so-called American left that the American left is a joke. There are lefts in other countries. They're serious. They aren't a joke. In America, the so-called American left is, you know, not to be taken all that seriously, I guess. Things like this are why. Jesus Christ, when they're in the concentration camps, they can say hello to the right-wing guards who are guarding them and say, hey, remember when we were at that rally together? Oh, Jesus Christ. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. The Republican-dominated House of the Tennessee Legislature voted 77-16 to approve a piece of viciously anti-trans and anti-drag legislation on Thursday. The bill is now waiting for Republican Governor Bill Lee to sign it into law. If this bill is signed into law, it would classify drag shows as adult cabaret performances and would criminalize them, as well as engaging in, quote, male or female impersonations, unquote, in public spaces or in front of children, regardless of the nature of the show. So somebody dressing, you know, male to female or female to male, bang, that's a big crime, and you get arrested for that. Can we think, I mean, you know, some of Shakespeare is going to get some of those people arrested. A drag performer named Jaden told Entertainment Weekly that, quote, drag is an art form. It's entertainment, and it's inspiring to many. It has saved the lives of many people, and without it, our community will miss it greatly, unquote. She went on to say, quote, My fear is also for my trans brothers and sisters, as they could be targeted for being in drag in public when they are just living their normal lives. The drag bill is being disguised as only for the, quote, protection of children, unquote. I disagree with this narrative. Firearms are the number one cause of death for children and teens. Depression and anxiety is increasing among our youth. These problems should be addressed rather than blaming the downfall of our children on drag shows that are for the most part private and ticketed, unquote. And yeah, this is like just the right wing pandering to their tiny core of hate mongers. And, you know, a trans person, you know, in some places, I bet you in Tennessee, they don't allow you to change your gender on your birth certificate or maybe your driver's license. And so you're a trans person and you're in a, you have some gender you're showing and you're driving along and a cop stops you and looks at your driver's license and sees, oh, it says you're not supposed to be wearing a dress or you're not supposed to be wearing this. Well, you're here. You're in drag. I'm arresting you. And this is how this could go. And, oh, man, this is like amazingly bad stuff. And I think Tennessee is going to need to have something done to it. This is stupid, stupid stuff to go around doing this to people. And some of the drag performers, some people from RuPaul's drag show are saying this is unconstitutional. I don't know if any of them are lawyers, but it certainly should be. I mean, you want to go around and wear something. What if some guy just wants to wear a dress? So what? Now he gets arrested? Well, that's the way it was in some places decades ago, but it hasn't been that way for a long time. And God damn, it's sort of like, it reminds me of Dial M for Murder, where late in the movie, I only saw the movie, I never saw the play. Late in the movie, one cop gives a woman's handbag to another cop, and the cop puts it over his arm to carry, and the head cop says, no, don't walk around with it like that, you'll be arrested. Well, you know, because it would look like he's carrying a woman's handbag. And so, you know, maybe they think it's his. And so that kind of mentality is alive and well in Tennessee. This is terrible stuff. And of course, they're anti-gay bigots in Tennessee also. But what was that? 77 to 11? 77 to 16 was the vote. This is awful stuff. And this is not for any real thing that's going on. This is to score political points. I'm more right-wing than you are.
Well, you know, our Paul, ever since Roe got overturned, anything's possible. And it looks like some things are probable. This has to be a violation of a person's civil rights. It has to be.
I can think of different ways to challenge this law and have it go to the Supreme Court. Now, the Supreme Court, I don't trust not to say, oh, yeah, you can do that. But on the other hand, you could set up something. What if a guy is wearing kilts? I'm wearing Scottish kilts. No, I'm not Scottish. I just feel like wearing this. Well, it's a skirt, so you're not going to arrest him. So one guy wears a Scottish kilt. Somebody next to him wears a skirt, a regular skirt that doesn't have plaid on it. And does one get arrested and the other doesn't? Do both get arrested? Does nobody get arrested? These are the terrible things. Now, you would say, well, if nobody gets arrested, it's fine. But we know from the old sodomy and solicitation laws that we had in New York State and other places years ago that it's not that it's always going to be enforced, that it's enforced sometimes. When do the police or somebody or a politician want it enforced and against whom? And there you go. This is the kind of thing that is very used to discriminate against people. It's been struck down in the past, but with this Supreme Court, you have to wonder. However, I suspect that with this anti-drag thing, saying even, you know, just being in public is a crime, I suspect that some smart people who, you know about the law and know how to maneuver around in it could probably come up with some scenarios that would really test it and that would really make various judges have to either say, yeah, you can't do that, which would start to weaken it from the bottom up, or to say, yeah, put that person in jail. And it would be so absurd that at some point, either they're going to have to say, this law doesn't work, or they're going to have to really double down and say, you can do this kind of thing, at which point you start saying, you know, I mean, it's obviously a First Amendment issue. And at the point where if the Supreme Court doubles down and says, yeah, you can do this, well, at that point, maybe you can also start saying you can't go around, wearing a carrying a Nazi flag. You can't look like a stormtrooper, you know, stuff like that, and see how that goes. Of course, that's a part of tearing America apart, which is something we're seeing here.
And once again, they're going after trans youth, which is just, God.
Yeah.
These people just, they just must hate children. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Or they hate the wrong kind of children.
Yeah, that's largely it. Over drag and transvestism and transgender issues many decades ago. And in fact, at the Christopher Street Liberation Day, which ran the annual Christopher Street Liberation Day March, also known as the Pride March, that group, I was in it for some years. And at one point, a guy shows up and he says, I'm from GLAAD. Now, it's not the GLAAD with two A's, which deals with media issues today. It was just GLID, GLAD. And he shows up and he's from the group. Oh, yeah, what is that? GLAAD. Gay Liberation Allows Drag. And he wasn't in drag. And the reason was he was with somebody, you know, who was into drag and all of that. And their group sent him in because they were afraid to come to us. Now, overwhelmingly, in my opinion, we would have said, fine, there's somebody in here who's in drag. We don't care. However, there were some issues with some lesbians who really were anti-drag. They were anti-transvestite very heavily. There was, in fact, a Pride March in 1973, that marched downtown, which I always didn't like. I liked marching uptown, out of the ghetto into Central Park. And this one marched downtown, and it ended in Washington Square Park, where we all got to sit down. We're told to sit down on the concrete. My male ex and I went there, and we said, okay, we're here. We'll sit down. All right, we're sitting down. Has it been 1 minute yet? When it hit 1 minute, we said, enough of this. We're not leaving our asses on the hot concrete to sit here and watch this stuff. We've been here. We marched. We're going home. And we did that. However, not everybody went home. And at that particular event up on the stage, there was this big confrontation between one of the lesbian leaders named Jean O'Leary and the rather famous these days, Sylvia Rivera, who was a transvestite. Became transgendered, you know, people were mixing things together in those days. This is 1973. This is 50 years ago. And they almost had a real fist fight up on the stage there over some of these issues because some lesbians were very adamantly, violently at times against transvestites. So that can be divisive even in like the gay liberation movement. And so these people in Tennessee are trying to be divisive with all of America, along with some other states, of course. And this is terrible stuff. It's more of treating people badly. And it's not that different from Putin bombing people's apartments.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
And hanging around with politics a little more in the somewhat comical, in a really disgusting way, we have an update with George Santos, the bozo from Long Island, sort of from Long Island, who got himself elected by saying how great he was and all of the degrees he had from various colleges that he never went to and all of this other stuff and how rich he had made himself in space of 1 year. And he got elected. Well, of course, now the feds are investigating the possibility that he made himself a straw donor for all of that money that suddenly showed up. So there's these straw donor issues here. Well, he isn't exactly keeping a low profile and behaving like, oh, if I stay low, they won't notice me. No, he's trying to get more attention. Maybe at base, this guy is self-destructive. Maybe that's what's going on, this whole thing. Anyway, he is now one of the backers of a bill to make the AR-15 the national gun of America. Yeah, this is the AR-15. It's the weapon of choice for people who want to murder many people. And this George Santos fool is now sponsoring a bill to glorify that particular weapon and make it America's official gun. And there's even a picture of this George Santos jerk wearing a suit with a AR-15 pin on his lapel. I mean, this is like bizarre just to look at, even if you didn't know he was pushing this bill. It's like, what the bleep is wrong with you, Jack? Who walks around with a pin in the shape of an assault rifle?
Oh, I bet it's he's part of the group of 10. I guess they're now 11 people who would be wearing stuff like that.
God.
Up on the hill.
He must be trying to kill himself or something. He has to be. This is not rational. We know what his basic idea is. His basic idea is get elected to Congress and then for one term get a pension for life. Although I think with only one term, it's not a gigantic pension, but you get something. And you also get lifelong free medical care, which can be very convenient. So that's his goal here. But he's doing things that are going to, when he's not in Congress anymore, which is going to happen at the next election, at least, maybe sooner, he's going to have to live in the world. And people are going to remember all of this crap. Jesus, I guess he hasn't thought it through, or maybe he is trying to get himself killed or something.
Well, or those creeps who are there, you know, and we're not going to name them because we know their names. Oh. But they're basically white supremacists, the neo-Nazis. They found that they can manipulate him. So that's what they're doing.
He certainly is stupid. Oh, it's the pitching train. Yes, this is the WBAI pitching train that we're on. And we're going to start pitching. And the WBAI pitching train is not going to have any toxic spills at all. We're just going to beg you for money. Yes, we're going to beg you to get up, go to your phone, dial 1-212-209-2950 and say, hey, I wanna become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. A BAI buddy is the name we have for our sustaining membership at WBAI. Yes, you become a BAI buddy and you donate to WBAI on a monthly basis. And how it works is you call 1-212-209-2950. When the person at the call center picks up, you say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. Make sure you get Back of the Book in there. Management is, you know, getting huffy about programs that don't have either enough or none at all BAI buddies. So, and you tell them you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book, and the sustaining membership is you tell them how much you would like to donate to WBAI on a monthly basis. It can be $5 a month, $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month, more than that if you can afford it. And you tell them your credit card or debit card information, and then you tell them what day of the month you want to be charged for the donation. And what happens is when that day of the month rolls around, and you pick it so that it's not inconvenient for you. A lot of people don't want it done at like the first of the month, at the end of the month. Some people don't want it in the exact middle of the month. You know, somewhere where you say, yeah, that's a good day. It won't interfere with anything. And you tell them what day you want. And what happens is when that day of the month rolls around, your credit card or debit card will be charged, and that will be a donation to WBAI. And that will help to keep WBAI going. One of the great advantages of the BAI Buddy system is that it will help to give WBAI a predictable bit of income. Otherwise, everything is, you know, is it here now? Is it there now? And the fluctuation, otherwise, of revenue that comes in from pitching is something that's driven people crazy for years. So what's happened is we now have this idea of having regular donations, monthly donations. And again, $5, $10, $15, $20 a month. If you can afford that stuff, please try and help us out by calling 1-212-209-2950 and say, yeah, you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. You could also, if you want, make a one-time donation, which a number of our listeners have done. You can make a one-time donation to WBAI in the name of Back of the Book. And same number, 1-212-209-2950. Again, make sure you tell them, I want to make a one-time donation in the name of Back of the Book. It is important that we get credit for this because management is sending stuff out, noting that a lot of shows don't have any BAI buddies. A whole bunch of shows have only one BAI buddy, and management is displeased. So if we could get some BAI, I don't know if we have any. I know we have one-time donors. We have one-time donors, and that's good. But I don't know if we have any BAI buddies at this time. We did have one. Unfortunately, she passed away. And I'm not sure if we have a second one. I think we had a second one a while back. I don't know if they renewed. People, for some reason, will tend to not be in it. What happens is the credit card expires, and then they don't, you know, the company doesn't go and search and see, well, what happens with this and renew it. So BAI has to, and we don't have enough people to do that, apparently. 1-212-209-2950. That's the serious stuff we need to do right here is have you call that number, 1-212-209-2950, and say, hello. That's their phone ringing at the call center. There are a bunch of cows at the call center. And the cows at the call center will pick up the phone and say, moo. And you say, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And again, you give them your credit card or debit card number and tell them how much you want to donate, $5, $10, $15, $20 a month or more, and or tell them you want to make a one-time donation for however much, and then you tell them what day of the month you want to be charged if you're going to become a BAI buddy. We really could use a BAI buddy or two here. We kind of need that. So please give us a call, 1-212-209-2950. It will really help a whole bunch of a load if you will call that number. Call it now, and we'll be able to say we have some WBAI buddies. And you can become one of them. I'm serious. We need some. We need some. They're going to start looking for stuff. They're having, you know, all sorts of things going on with revenue here. We need to raise money. It's no joke at all. Please, please call us. 1-212, call not us, but call the call center that gives us the money. 1-212-209-2950. 2950, and we'll thank you if you do. And if you do that, write to me, rpm@glib.com, rpm@glib.com. Let me know you've donated. Thanks a lot. That's been it for Back of the Book this week, actually for a fortnight. Coming up next is
Ecologic with Ken Gale, Donna Stein, and Sally Gellert.
We'll be back in 2 weeks. We're preempted for a fundraiser next week. We're in late winter. We're getting closer to spring. So look out the window and enjoy it. If you can, go out and enjoy it. Don't give up anything for Lent. And above all, remember what that giving the state of Tennessee a very dirty look Dormouse said.
We're raising money today for the Tower Fund here at WBAI.
And without that tower, we can't stay on the air.
Please, just give what you can.
And those contributions can be small or they can be large, but those are the contributions that we need to make in order to beat back the other side. No one is going to do it for us.
Even a few dollars a month helps to keep us on the air.
Let's face it, without Pacifica, what do you have? NPR is too milquetoast. PBS, too milquetoast. Without Pacifica, we're dead in the water.
And that pledge line is 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950.
And we're only asking those who can give it, those who can afford it. We know that there's some people out there who cannot afford it, and that's one of the problems. Those of us who relatively have must stand up for those who have not.
I'm sick and tired hearing people complain about, well, you know, the right wing has Fox News, and they have this and they have that. The oppressor always has more money than the oppressed. We have to make use of the resources that we have. We have people, and we have people that can make contributions.
Here on WBAI 99.5 FM, we want to have the Tower Fund strong and healthy, so we're not worried about it.
212-209-2950.
Or you can go online at WBAI.org and donate to the Tower Fund.
Hello, I'm David Rothenberg. I joined up with WBAI not long after Marconi discovered the wireless. If you tune in on any Saturday, that's the name of my program, you'll hear some good music, commentary covering politics, theater, movies, books, and a word or two about the criminal justice system. Actually, it's whatever's on my mind. And there's usually a guest or two to liven things up. Good start for the weekend, so I've been told. Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m. Oh, and I often have tickets for Broadway and off-Broadway shows. You can get to see a play and support listener-sponsored BAI at the same time. I'm looking forward to your stopping by.
I can hear you listening already.
Oh, baby, let's have a party.
Let's have a party.
Let's all begin.
This is Bob Law with what I think is an important announcement. I will be on the air for an additional hour, now from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. A little more time, a lot more ideas and information. So join me on Saturday morning from now on for 2 hours, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. right here at 99.5 FM WBAI New York.
This is Ralph Nader. You can now listen to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour on Saturday afternoon at 5 p.m. It'll be one of the least forgettable radio programs in your experience because we touch on subjects not covered by the mainstream media, the public media, and often the independent media. You can listen to this program on listener-sponsored WBAI at 99.5 FM. where it's broadcast and streamed at WBAI.org. It ain't gonna happen until folks like you and me just stand up. Well, you've been sitting way too long.